Well, we say once again, happy Friday to you guys. Thanks for tuning in to the FDN Fantastic Friday Call. That's what we call it around here. It's also known as the Functional Health Coaching Show. Whatever you want to call it, it's FDN, Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, and we're here to support you. My name is Brandon Mollet. I'm your host today, and I think I'm flying solo today. Brandon is out representing FDN in another city, so getting the word out there, telling people about what we do, and what we have to offer. But happy to be on with you guys today. Thanks for spending part of your Friday with me, about an hour or so. This is a live call, so if you want to call in and ask a question, make a comment, say hello, really appreciate that. So that number is 347-637-1378. Again, 347-637-1378. This call, we do it live pretty much every Friday, 1 o'clock Central Time. You may be catching the recording. That's cool. If you want to tune in another week, we pretty much do it, like I said, every week. It's been at least a 10-year tradition with FDN to check in on a Friday, give you some updates, give you some support, case management, whatever you need, clarify something, sort of our job. So one way that we do that, we do it also through, of course, the course and with Facebook and all the various social medias, and you can always email us, give us a phone call. We're here to support you. That's a big part of what we want to be for you. It's a big hallmark of the FDN course is the community, is the support. We want you to do well with this and feel like you're confident, strong, moving forward, doing this work that we're doing. So it is February 7th, 2020, so already over a month into the year. Hopefully it's been going good for you. I would say from what I can tell, nothing's slowing down in any way. FDN itself, the course, the things that we're doing, improvements, things we're adding, the AFTMP, our association, our support, and then just the world in general. People are still sick, if you guys didn't realize that and couldn't tell. People still need FDN and what we can do with our methodology, how we do to realize root causes, work on those deep down things that people don't always know that are going on. I was talking with a client the other day, a couple days ago, one of my free consultations that I do, and she had exhausted about everything she knew to do. So dietary things, did all the dietary things the doctor asked her to do, lost some weight, was down to a good weight, anything and everything that she could figure out, search on the internet, try, she had done it. Still, some blood scores weren't looking very good, still several symptoms were still in place. And after we talked, I just said, hey, you know what, this is where I get to come in, and we get to discover and figure out the things that you don't know are a problem for you. There's some things that are hidden stressors that you don't know about. And so we just need more data, and that's going to get you to where you want to get to. So that message resonates with people. A lot of folks you'll talk to, this isn't their first time. You know, first time, not their first rodeo, first time they've ever tried to make a change to improve their health. But they just need the extra support, the information, the methodology, the way we think, and you as a person, as a practitioner, the power that you have and the way you've been trained to think and do the detective work and the detail that we go to and the time that we spend with the person, that's going to take them over those humps maybe they couldn't achieve before. That's what I think about every day. That's my job. Everybody's on their own journey. They've got their own path. They've got their own place in the process that they happen to be. I'm just taking them to the next step. However fast that goes, how that takes, how long it takes, how difficult it is, whatever needs to be done, we're going to go to that next step, lock arms, and keep moving forward, help them through those things. So you as a natural health practitioner, as an FDN practitioner, it's part of the coaching is a big part of what we do. So probably on my mind this morning, I had several of my own personal clients this morning working through some things, and that's probably why I'm mentioning this now, thinking about just folks and moving to the next level. It's just done, you know, phone call by phone call, conversation by conversation. All right. Well, again, flying solo today, but glad you guys tuned in with me. If you want to call in and ask a question, make a comment, I'm happy to talk with you. Number is 347-637-1378. A lot of you guys are lining up already on the call, so I'm glad to see you there. If you want to ask a question and you're on, just hit 1 on your keypad. I'll bring you on, and we'll talk a little bit. You might have time for a couple questions, so fine by me. Announcement-wise, see if there's anything big I wanted to mention that was coming up. Well, I'm always going to mention we will, that until October, the FDN conference. So we're going to do it a third year in a row. So it's our annual conference. This year is going to be October 23rd through the 25th, and again in San Diego, Hard Rock Hotel, same location as before. So a little bit earlier than we had last year. Make plans to come. Ticket prices are always cheaper the sooner you get them. The closer to conference time, the price, of course, is going to go up there. So usually have some good rates locked in for the hotel for accommodations. Well, can't beat San Diego as far as beautiful city, the culture, the food, the people there, the weather, of course, obviously, too. A good thing to be and attend. So remind you about that. Make plans to come. No matter where you're at, if you're looking at just taking the course, it's a good way to get to know us. We had, I don't know, maybe 15 people I know of decided to take the course after coming to the FDN conference. They signed up there on the spot. They saw what we were about, what we had to offer, and they said, hey, I want to be part of this. So if you're thinking about the course, it's a great way to come and just learn. It's worth the price of admission just to listen to the speakers. Even if you don't even become an FDN practitioner, the speakers and the education and the things you'll learn, the contact you have with those speakers, some of the companies that are big supporters of us and what we do, that we rely on to do our work, they'll be there as well. And of course, just the energy and the vibe and all the people that are there, who you're going to connect with, who you're going to meet, and where that will come from. So if you're a trainee, even better. If you're a graduate, well, come on. So October 23rd to the 25th this year, 2020, San Diego. So we'll keep announcing that, let you guys know about that. And any questions you guys have, you can reach out to us about that. One of the highlights of the year for sure. So we've got the conference, and then I'm just going to check to see if there's anything big in emails or anything. So I know Paleo FX is coming up. We've got a contest there to win a couple badges. And then AFT and PY's, we had Kendra on with her HTMA course, hair tissue mineral analysis course. And course starts really quick, like in 3 days. So if you want to take her course, which I highly recommend, that's coming up, so don't miss the time on that. Yeah, those are big things there, I believe. All right. Well, I don't have Brendan today or Tess or Brandy or anybody to banter back and forth with, so it may just be one thing to the other, but hopefully you'll be okay with that. All right, let's see. All right, well, hey, graduates, that's going to be the next thing on the list here. We have graduates every week, and proud to announce these, and we love getting to do this. It is a big accomplishment to complete the course. If you have completed the course, FDN course, if you are in the course right now, you know it takes some effort and some time and some sacrifice, and things are going to have to be put off, and you're going to have to rearrange things to get through the course. Most people I know are not sitting at home and listening to read, teach 10 hours a day. We're trying to fit it in as we can with busy practices or even making a career change or family responsibilities, all of those things. So to complete the FDN course, to do it well, not to rush through it, not to do things halfway and give a halfway effort, it's quite a thing. So we want to celebrate that. We do that every single week. I get to do it individually with the verbal final. But then, of course, publicly, celebrate that. It's an awesome thing. So we've got four graduates this week that we want to commend here. And we are staying in the U.S. This week here, so no international, but I'm sure they'll be coming up in coming weeks here. I think they're coming up on my calendar, so looking forward to those calls. So first one is Dr. Laura Van Bryce. She is a chiropractor. That's where the doctor comes from there, from Washington State. And Elisa Wilson from Oregon, so staying up there on the northwest side of things. She's originally from Russia, so and very awesome background where she's come from, what she's built as a practitioner. Jennifer Markham, and she's from California, so moving down the coast there. And then about as far south as you can go, just about, is San Diego, California. And that's Jane Penny. So sort of the home FDN headquarters, if you want to say it that way, or at least a large concentration of FDN practitioners in San Diego. So, a little geography lesson today, but also a big congratulations to these four ladies for doing an awesome job. Very proud of you. So cool stuff. All right. So keep moving through your practicals as quick as you can. Keep that momentum going. Listen to those videos and just get excited about it. That's a whole bunch of the attitude. Your attitude towards something makes a huge difference. I think it's a lesson for everybody, but if you love this work, then hopefully the course doesn't feel like work. It's just more and more fun things you get to do. All right. Well, I've got plenty of time for questions today. So 49 minutes left in the call today. And so I'm happy to take anybody on the line there that wants to jump on with a question now. Hit 1 on the keypad. Again, 347-637-1378 is the call-in number. I do have several written-in questions that I will go through and cover if needed, if nobody has a question immediately, but happy to help out. So, all right, let me grab a question off the list here. I don't see any hands raised as of yet, but you guys definitely do not be shy. All right, so we'll bring this up. This happens often. We hear this from lots of folks, this question here. So about H. pylori. So, you know, you may have heard, you may know everything about H. pylori, but not everybody on this call does. Maybe you just be introduced to that particular bacterial infection or its resonance in your body. So always good to learn. Remember, people are at different levels in the course. So this person said, I heard Reed say in a slide that if we find H. pylori, we would address that even if parasites are present. And that's first if parasites were present. But then in our protocol, we're told to treat parasites, then bacteria, then yeast. H. pylori is a bacteria. I'm a little confused. So what do we address first? All right. Good question. So, well, every case is going to be a little individual. So generally, of the course, we give you the general principles of how to approach different situations, you know, what's going to be a certain order. So we'll say, hey, supplementation-wise, here's probably the best order to go, generally, the best order to go. Does it mean that every single time it's going to be that way? Not always. So in the case of H. pylori and also a parasite showing up on a protocol, typically I'm going to probably address the parasite first, still. But it doesn't mean that you couldn't change that order up a little bit and work on H. pylori and then the parasite. It's probably not going to make or break the protocol necessarily. I think it's a good practice to go ahead and get kind of the big guys out of the way, work on those, because they tend to have an effect and stink up the whole place to where it's more hospitable for the other bacteria and yeast or less invasive parasites, or I guess even worms too, to set up shop. So good practice says to do that. Now, I do like, as much as I can, to try to combine these different phases. So if somebody has a parasite going on, we have bacteria to deal with and yeast to deal with. Each one of those categories, those organisms, need a certain amount of time under a natural, herbal, botanical protocol to address that completely due to life cycles, the time it just takes to rid the body of something like that, lots of reasons biologically for that, why you don't just do it for 5 days, you know, or 10 days or 2 weeks, longer protocols. So I'm going to typically, if I can, have the person start out with whatever I decide to do, typically a parasite, work those supplements in for the parasite. If everything's going really well, they're working up to full dosages, they're feeling okay, not a lot of die-off, no nausea or big stool changes or flu-like symptoms or headaches or anything that can happen when you're doing some major remodeling in the gut like we are purging things, they're doing okay. All right, hey, let's add in some of the H. pylori bacteria stuff. And so you're doing two phases at once. So you're still going to give that pathogen its due time. Right, so it's at 60 days on a parasite protocol, for example. I'm still going to give that 60 days, and I'm still going to do 60 days for bacteria. But they're just going to be overlapped, so it's not 2 months, you know, 60 days, and then another 2 months, so you have a four-month protocol length. It shortens it down to 2 months, maybe 2.5 months, depending on how exactly it falls. So you can address different things at the same time and get more quick results, maybe quicker relief, as long as the person can tolerate that. And that's the biggest thing. That's sequencing and titration. Can you work them in? Can the person tolerate that? Course correction like that, sequence and titration, that's the conversation I have multiple times a day. It's always going to be, always going to have some of that, remind the client to do that, because a big part of what we do is teach somebody how to listen to their bodies. Do you do this? How do you feel? You don't do this, how do you feel? And that's not just supplements. That could be dietary things, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, anything you do, listening to the body. So it really still comes down to that. Can you tolerate that so you can move more quickly? You will have clients that are very particular and touchy, or whatever word that you want to say, where they just can't tolerate that much of a certain supplement, or can't do multiple products or challenge, or you need a smaller amount of it. It's going to elicit a positive effect or therapeutic effect in the body. That's just individual body chemistry. nothing that you're doing wrong, nothing that's wrong with the product necessarily, nothing wrong with them. Nobody's to blame. It's just the case that you have, right? We all come with, you know, I have a client that has 500 metabolic chaos scorecard points, and I might have one that has 200. So everybody's going to be different. Some people are going to have 10 things that are popping up on all the labs. Some have 4. Well, I'm just going to work with what I've got and everybody's individual body chemistry. That's sort of FT in a nutshell, right? So that's one of those questions where you can't say, oh, you always do it this way. There can be different times where you might make a little different call based on that case. And that's where you've got to get really invested in that person in that case. Trust intuition, trust your training, and also what you're hearing from that client. So all those things sort of come together, and then you still have to pick a direction. You know, you have to go somewhere. If you don't move, you're not going to get anywhere, right? So pick a direction, and you try it. Maybe you say to that person, hey, in a couple of days, let me know how you're doing, whatever happens to be, their issue happens to be in a couple of days. Let me know how things are going. Shoot me a text, send me an email, whatever, let me know, or it might wait to the next session. So course correction, how often you course correct, what you need to do. I don't mind that with my clients. I say, hey, you know, let me know how it's going. If they're having acute illness, sickness, something like that going on, let me know how you're doing every couple of days. You know, I want to make sure that what you're doing to address this, you're improving, we're not going backwards. It's part of what we do. So that's how I would answer that one. Let me make sure I got that complete. All right. So hopefully that settles that one there. But H. pylori, definitely one to address. All right, we'll check for any hands raised. All right, I've got, hey, more people popping on. How cool, guys. All right, I've got one here, so I've got 810 area code there. Hello, 810, what's your name?
Yes, hello, Brendan, and hello to my FDN friends. Again, I hope I'm not taking time from other people calling in, but I've been having this question as we're talking about parasites, about the 401H, and specifically for the Citrobacter brachii. And if you have a patient that has, for example, the only thing that shows up on the, you know, the test, it's the Citrobacter and no fungal, no yeast or no other parasites, and there is no history of rheumatoid arthritis or any other autoimmune disease or, like, say, urinary tract infections, because, you know, as we read through the protocol, this is showing that, you know, could be connected with autoimmune diseases. But what else would you think could be the cause of something like this, just that particular, pathogen showing on a 401H? And what else, you know, investigatively you would think might be happening with the person.
Gotcha, gotcha. Is this Lucy?
This is Rani. Rani from Michigan again.
Rani, okay.
You know,
gotcha.
It's
all
so
right.
Interesting because the more we learn, it's
similar.
So interesting because we want to know more and more questions are popping up. So I had this question, so I gathered the courage to call again. So thank you for taking my call.
I'm glad you did. Sorry, I messed up. I should ask your name first, but I thought it sounds
yes,
like Lucy or Rani, one of the two. So.
Yes.
Uh-huh. No, you're fine. So good. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, so... So Citrobacter, you're right. So that's a bacteria, right? That one there, it's sort of claim to fame, if you want to say that way. It falls in a potential autoimmune triggering bacteria. So the stress that causes on the body, the toxins it would produce, the damage it would cause to the gut lining, to the immune system, all those things collectively can put pressure on the system so much that you do have an autoimmune condition that's maybe diagnosable to occur. So that's exactly right on that. A person doesn't have to have an autoimmune condition diagnosed to still want to address that. So I've had people that, you know, that had no autoimmune condition, didn't seem to correlate very much at all directly. But, you know, keep in mind when you have things going on in the gut, you may not have overt GI symptoms. You could have other of these peripheral things that we don't think too much about that are connected. They could have headaches. They could have anything to do with intestinal permeability, so brain fog. Mm-hmm. Energy issues, nutritional issues, things like that. So in this case, I would trust the lab result, which you have there in the Citrobacter. I would address, typically you're going to, if you have, let's say, 4 categories, you have parasite, bacteria, yeast, and biofilm. So on a 401H or really any lab, I'm going to address bacteria, yeast, and biofilm pretty much every single time on a first test. right? Parasite, potentially, if it's showing up or if there's a major history of that, that makes you think, maybe the first time around it would be a good idea to go ahead and be a little more comprehensive and address that. So in this case, in short, I would say, yeah, definitely have something in place protocol-wise to address bacteria. Definitely would go with yeast, and then make sure you're addressing biofilm as well. So, yeah, even without a direct correlation. So that's the good thing, right, because we can't always go by symptoms, right? That's one of the good things about what we do is that we've got lab tests and help bring that complete picture. You still have to make a call. You still have to put a little interpretation in there, what you see going on. And the good thing is going through a good pathogen protocol, bacteria and yeast, biofilm, probably going to help most folks, right? It's going to be a really good thing. So I would I'd go after that one. So is that sort of what you're asking on that?
So I don't want to take time from other people, but I wanted you also...
Oh, you're fine. We've got time.
As far as the protocol, though, so you always add the GI detox when you do the bacterial, you know, and always you add the GI detox, right, when you do the protocol.
Yeah, I really often do. I do like to have some sort of binder in there. I think just in general, we've got it's detoxification is a challenge for people just in general to do. So a binder like that, especially during a pathogen protocol or about anything that we do, you're stirring the waters. You're going to have some things that need to be cleansed out of the system. And so not only hydration and bowel movements, the typical things we think about, but, yeah, also a binder is going to grab some of that stuff, pull it out, make things go a lot quicker in case they do have some die-off. I think that'd be very wise in this case.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the biofilm disruptor, is it okay if, like, because I hear that, you know, there are side effects. I mean, not. I know that most of the people perhaps, you know, handle very well the Interface Plus, but you can do it interchangeably also with Biocide and the biofilm disruptor, right? I mean, if I choose to do that,
yes.
Is that okay, or do you use it most often, or you always resort to the Interface Plus? What is your experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am probably more of a fan of the Biocidin just for because it covers so much, right? So, for efficiency. So it covers bacteria so nicely, yeast really well, and it addresses biofilm in a different way than what the EDTA and the enzymes are going to in the Interface Plus. So it's more than one way to address the same situation. So it's typically what I'll do. I'll have Biocidin fit in that place in my protocol, sort of build around that many times. But it doesn't mean that you couldn't do a little combination of both. If you want to do a half dose or a small dose of the Interface Plus, you got to find some room for it right in the protocol away from all food and probably prescription medication as well, you know, around that. So find a place for that. You could. But the nice thing is if the person didn't respond well to either one of those or one or the other, you've got another pathway you could go. So if Interface Plus doesn't make them feel very good, maybe because they need it, you could do some Biocide. Or if Biocide is not so great, you've got Interface Plus, maybe put some Allomax in there or something to address the bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I ask, because, again, so much it comes from personal experience as well, but I know that most of the time people might not have side effects of it from the Interface Plus, for example, but that's what I took before the 401H and, as again, walking the talk, right? So I really did not feel good on Interface Plus, so I just wanted to find other alternative. And if there is one more last question, if you have time for one more thing for me, I don't want to take
some time. Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
I we know about the GI map, right? The new test, the GI map, that it's much more accurate. And if people, like, say, have a very sensitive GI tract, they might not be, you know, it might be easier for them to just to have us ordering the GI map. Is this what in your experience, is this what you prefer more, or you always first take the 401H when you have to send them for pathogen testing? Like, what is the, you know, do you send them also to have the GI map with one stool sample and no need to take Interface Plus before that, right?
Yes. So kind of comparing, contrasting those two tests, and I'll probably throw in the 401H EXP new from BioHealth, so it's sort of a mix in between the 401H and the GI map. So generally with stool testing, there is, so you've got elements of both, right? And even some things that aren't including in the 401H or the GI map. So you've got options. There actually are a couple more stool tests you can do on there. It's not to confuse things too much. Just sort of in some ways like food sensitivity testing, there's not a perfect test out there. Whichever test you use, you're probably going to get, you're going to get really good results. So I think it comes down to what you feel comfortable with, what you maybe try and use, and you see what you feel like are better results potentially. If it is easier to get a single-day sample for that person, and it just seems to be the better fit for that person, maybe they have extreme constipation, and trying to get three samples over 7 days is quite a challenge. Maybe one sample is good, so you'd have reasons for that. With the GI map, you do have some gastrointestinal health markers that are included that give you some nice information about digestive capability, detoxification, inflammation, gluten, immune system. You get some extra information, which may be worth the additional cost because the GI map, the 401EXP are more expensive than the 401H. You might find that information to be helpful. I use the GI map more than any of the other two. Currently, it's just what I've landed on that I like. It sort of fits in with the mix of what I'm doing pretty well. But I don't lean too heavily on any of those. I've still got, like we're talking about here with the Citrobacter, you've got to correlate with the client. You look at the whole case, everything as a whole, and might not be too dependent upon, let's say, for instance, that GI map goes away. Why don't you have the 401H? Well, if you feel like your practice is ruined, you'll never get good results, then I think you're kind of missing the point. But they are different testing methodologies. They're looking at things differently. There are things the 401H does better than the GI map, and then vice versa. So there's sort of pros and cons to all of them. So, you get the information you feel like is beneficial to you, what's going to get you results. It's an individual choice. We give you the choice. You've got options on lots of things to run. And, of course, we do start with the BioHealth labs there because that's what FDN was built on, was using those labs, which I used for a very long time, even before these other labs came about, the Dutch test for hormones, things like that. But you do have the option. We give you freedom. We're going to dictate exactly what you do other than doing a thorough investigation and root cause focused and staying in your lane as far as what you're allowed to do with the certification that you have. So it's out there. There's training on all those things, but it's just an individual practitioner's decision what fits in.
I really appreciate you mentioning, because as we do not know all the tests. I mean, I haven't learned them. We're learning as we go. So I was not, I'm hearing for first time kind of about this test in between. So this is a very, very helpful information. Thank you so much, Brendan. Thank you.
You're welcome, Rainey. Appreciate you calling in. So call in any time. Always welcome callers. We probably always need a few. So thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much. I mean, if there is, I have a few questions, but meaning if I can always later.
Yeah. So I'll call out here for any hands raised. I don't see any at the moment, but I see a lot of you guys listening. So we'll just do the Brendan and Rainey show here for a few minutes. So why don't you go ahead and ask another one?
Well, the other questions were actually more like kind of not administrative exactly, but working directly with the patients and more like, taking their history, finding where they are, what's going on with their life, making the clinical correlations. But then when you reach a point, for example, the reason I'm asking you again is because I had another text from a friend of mine, and hopefully, once I'm done with the studies, I'll be able to start working with her. But she actually texted me that she was desperate and she's gaining weight and she's not able to, she doesn't know the cause. So I already have like kind of program as to what I'm going to do once I start working with her. I already sent her to use the empty diet. So we'll see what she's going to do with that. But in your experience though, when you reach a point when like say patient really is following everything we tell them and they're still, and you address the pathogens, you go through the DRESS protocol, so then, they're still kind of like a stumbling block. They say they exercise, but they follow, the diet, they follow all the other stuff, but then they're still not able to progress as fast. What do you do? I mean, what is the next kind of like, what comes to mind next? It's like if somebody's really gaining weight and they say they do all the things you tell them to do.
Ooh, good question there. That's a good one. I asked that myself definitely early on in the process because, yeah, you'll find working with people, sometimes the five base lab, I'd say, I always give the stat about 85% of the time, the basic five labs ran it once, maybe twice on some of them. Working with the person for 6 months, they're going to get where that they want to be. Things are looking awesome. They're feeling great. We're happy with the progress. So there are a small percentage of people, and maybe depending on who you're working with, the population group you're working with, you might have a little higher percentage of those people. But maybe 15% or so that, okay, if they're doing everything right, we've done the five labs, they're doing the dress protocol, as far as I can tell, really well. We've maybe even retested and things are looking good. Still, things are not shifting and changing. So good question there. So typically, my short answer on that would be there is something else that you haven't searched out yet or they don't realize or they haven't disclosed to you that's a stressor in their system that's keeping that from happening. So broad brush here as far as areas to be looking at. So first of all would be mental, emotional, spiritual things in that realm, which you may or may not be equipped to deal with necessarily, but something along those lines, old traumas, things to work through, deal with, current situations, stress from family, existential stress, why am I here, what's my purpose, things like that, regardless of what you believe spiritually, you've got to have some of those things in place. The mental, emotional side of things, that could be a huge blocking factor to a person getting better. So exploring that, whatever that ends up looking like, right? So then it would be other practitioners I would maybe look into, right? So maybe it's a structural situation. So a good chiropractor, a good body work person, something along those lines, right? So maybe referring out to somebody that does a different type of work. Maybe energy medicine might sort of fit in with that whole mental, emotional, spiritual side of things. Maybe somebody that does something a little differently than you do. So acupuncture, things of this nature, those like that. Also, I would think about things that are deeper hidden, things that people don't always, we do ask about them, but don't always hear. So what about dental issues? Maybe a root canal that has, it's still infected, a dental problem. Maybe there's fillings, things like that. Breast implants, issues with breast implants. It's been on my radar big time lately because of some clients, and we've got some awesome FDNs that are doing great work within that realm there. So something like that, maybe you don't even think about really asking about, or maybe they don't even know about it or didn't even hear that this could be an issue or a problem. So some of those things that you need to go, hey, you need to go see a biological dentist, you need to go see a plastic surgeon, you need to go deal with this particular thing because those can short-circuit healing as well. Until that infection from that root canal is dealt with, that could be a stressor there. I think you also have to look at also environmental things. So the mold issue, toxins in the environment, things like that that could be in a place exposed to something on a really regular basis that's causing a problem there. So that's when you get into that side of things. I'm not huge on the methylation side of things, not that I'm against it, or the genetic side of things. I know it's helped a lot of people. I'm going to defer to somebody else who knows more about that. If that is an issue there with that person, I'm aware of what's going on, but specific work there. And then probably going down the detox route, for me, actually, the first place I would go if beyond the five base FDN labs is an HTMA and go down the mineral route and the detox route. That's super, super powerful. That's probably my first step, other than asking questions about dental, breast implants, things of that nature. Going through that, looking at environmental, I'm going to go down the mineral detox side of things and start working in that area. Obviously, you could run an oat panel, right? You could look at one of those. You could look into thyroid, maybe specifically depending on that. The thyroid may need some individual attention, a little more specific to the scenario there. That's off the top of my head there. I think it covers a lot of things that you could look at. That might be a good list for you guys out there just to make and say, okay, if this isn't working, where else can we go? And that's just a conversation you have with your client, because I feel like FTM practitioners are the very best ones to figure out every health challenge that is not one that requires maybe immediate medical attention. What I mean by that is not only just us, is that I find myself often, I think you guys do too, in kind of the driver's seat and guiding a whole lot of what's going on, because we sort of know a lot. We've been exposed to a lot of different things. And so things that you maybe the person was not even on their radar at all, the fact that I could, you know, work with them the best I could for 6 months and not move the needle that much. Okay. Well, that tells you something, that we're doing the best that we can as far as this goes. There must be something else. So if I know about breast implant illness or I know about mold and I say, hey, go talk to Sarah Phillippe or Diane Kayser or Brendan or whatever that person is, and that person, that other practitioner, it's another FDN that's awesome, but somebody else like a good chiropractor or energy worker or something, if they can help that person and I led that person to that person and that person, quote, fixed them and got the big root cause thing dealt with, that's a victory for everybody. That's not, well, shoot, I didn't get it. My ultimate pride is going to rise up there and say, well, I wanted to figure that out. You can't know everything. So I think we find ourselves in that position a lot. I do, where I can sort through things. Yeah, I heard about this. I heard about this, or what's going on here. I think we can sort of, we would do a good job of putting it in context with the whole big picture. At least that's what I help people, finishing the course do. And that's why we offer so much on other testing and more advanced training in AFTMP and our advanced modules. So you can be familiar with these other areas that you may say, I'm not skilled in this, but I think this is an issue for you. Go talk to this person and check it out. So that's what I mean by we're going to figure out what the root causes are, because we're, I think, the most tuned in and the most detailed, the best detectives out of any other kind of practitioner I've ever seen before. You know, that's not a fault of anybody. It's just how we're trained. It's just what we do. It's just part of our being. So I'll kind of round up my answer with by saying that.
Yeah, that is a great information. I really appreciate it. And the very last thing, as you were saying, that if somebody really needs, they're very sick. I mean, I know Reed mentioned during the studies that, if you see them really being very sick, you have to refer them to a doctor. And in another place, he mentioned that we should not keep our name on any of the documents. If you have to refer them to a doctor, like say you really think they should be investigated further and like it's kind of beyond our, point of view, you just tell them you can go and talk to your doctor. You do not give them any, there is no form that we can submit, even our case notes form. Or did this ever happen to you that you probably noticed that the person is not very, that they probably need to be checked by their doctor, and you do not submit the case notes, though, or you do?
We don't have any formal referral form or process that I know of that FDNs can go through, and it depends on what you're coming to the course with, your credentials or licensure or whatever, so it's going to be case by case. But I think it sort of depends on who you're working with, what relationship you have. I've got close relationships with multiple practitioners in my area and a few across the country that we're going to collaborate a little bit, so I'm going to send them information. I'm going to, of course, the lab results my clients are doing self-testing, right? They're paying for that lab work.
Right.
Their lab work's their lab work. They can take that to that practitioner, add to that, especially if somebody understands the work that I do, then I'm going to be more forthcoming with information. But at the same time, you've got to respect the other practitioner, the way that they work. That person can come with their own health history. They can do their own investigative work. If they want my input, I can give that. I think that's a little bit case by case. I don't think you've got to respect the other practitioner about how they've been trained to work and what you're asking them to do. So I think it's a respect thing also, that you wouldn't want to bombard them with, hey, here's everything I've been doing, unless they're asking for that, which I think a good practitioner is going to ask about history. You're going to get more than a 5-minute conversation. So I'm not sure exactly what in the course where Reed says that. And so I can't say like word for word, respond precisely to that. I don't recall exactly the wording on that. That's my general take on that. I think it's good to have great working relationships with certain practitioners that you can refer into that don't think you're crazy or doing something wrong.
Yes.
They value what we bring to the table. So,
yes. Well, Well, that was really a great input, and I really appreciate it. It's wonderful that we are all, I mean, all of us, being even on this call, we just love the detective work. So it's just so interesting to dig deeper into all these different issues. And as we go, we learn about the administrative part of it, and it's just very interesting. And I greatly appreciate your help. Thank you so much, Brendan. I hope I didn't take too much of your time.
No, you did great. Nobody else had their hand raised, so it's good. I've got had 49 minutes that I needed to talk and answer questions, so you can have as much of that as you want. So thanks for calling in, Rainey, again.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and thank you to everyone else listening. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Great questions. That was super questions there. I love that. So going sort of from, I think, from, okay, just the basics at the end to thinking ahead. That's a good sign, Rainey. I was going to say, you're thinking the right way. I think at some point in your journey of being a practitioner, you're going to think, okay, well, what if this doesn't work? You know, we have a lot of confidence in what we do. I can back that up over doing it over 10 years. Doing it longer than that. A lot of practitioners that took the course a few years before I did, so they're out there doing the work, and you hear other testimonies. So we know things work, but, you know, what if it sort of doesn't work exactly like we planned it to, or it's not working as quickly as we want? So in short, make sure you do that dress protocol, you do the base work, the foundational work adequately. Go back and look at those labs again. Look at the case again. Go back and sort of start from scratch a little bit fresh. You can do that. So make sure you're doing dress, the basics of the end, thoroughly, completely. If you didn't run all five labs, well, you didn't do it completely. Did you do some retests on those labs? You know, at least on the stool test and the 205, maybe on the MRT, right? I mean, all of them. If you didn't do that, well, don't start looking in some weird crevice and some hole trying to figure out something that's kind of crazy and weird that's maybe not statistically going to be that regular. If you haven't done the base of FDN and done it thoroughly, completely, investigate like we need to, then go back to the drawing board or square one and hit the basics and the foundations. Because all those areas that we're looking at with the FDN model, it's going to cover most of those things. There's going to be a lot of overlap, and it just sort of works. But, again, good question to think about. What do I do? Where do I go? And I think that's coming from a desire to help people, not a prideful way of like, boy, I want it to be me, like I mentioned earlier. It's that I don't want that person to have a bad experience, or I just want the person to be healthier. So whoever it happens to be, or the combination of people, you know, it takes a village, the combination of people, that person gets better, and they live a better life, and they fulfill their calling, their mission, enjoy life. Whatever reasons they have for coming, their goals for coming and working with you, that's what we're trying to fulfill. So that's some real big picture stuff today, which is good. And we can get very myopic and look at the individual details. Now, what if you see this on a lab? What do you do? But that bigger picture there, I think you sort of have to do a little bit of both during a coaching session. At least I do. So, yeah, we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts, the nitty-gritty of what you're doing, what's going on, but also back up, maybe say, hey, so we've been working together for a month now. How are you feeling about the whole process, like mentally, emotionally? Is this going well? Are you happy about some of the results that you've seen here? How are you feeling about it all? Let that person be able to open up. It's a real safe space so they can speak. You know, if they're a little frustrated with things, they're not seeing the results that they want to see, if they're nervous about something, scared about something, you should be the one that they can talk to, if anybody. You know, you're the one that doesn't think they're crazy because they have, you know, all these health challenges that are going on. They don't need some medication. They don't need a psychotropic drug to numb them out. You're the one that actually can figure out some physiological reasons why you feel like you do. You're not crazy. You've got a parasite. You've got detox issues. You've got metals. You've got hormonal imbalance, all these things. So opening up those lines of communication and allowing that person to feel safe to talk with you, to express things, because any information you have, any feedback like that is important for you to help guide where you're going to go. Any feedback is good. Any information is good. I've had many people say when I'm doing an onboarding call with a person, oh, sorry for giving you so much information. I say, no, don't apologize at all. It's exactly what I need. I'm going to ask you for even more information on your intake forms. I need all the information I can. That's going to help me to do a better job to help you out. So open communication, really important. Thinking about that big picture. Where are we at? Where are we heading? It's not just, let's just keep plugging along. We've got to hopefully a goal we want to get to where they are in a maintenance program. We've restored function to most areas of the body as much as we possibly can within maybe a 3 to 6 month period. Not that you couldn't work longer, but we've restored that function. And then long term, okay, here's what you need to do. Here's the diet you want to continue with. You know, here's your metabolic type diet. You know what foods you're sensitive to, or you've maybe reintroduced some of those and you seem to feel pretty good. Okay, you want to keep going on that really good diet. Maintain that. You've prioritized your sleep. You've got a great sleep routine. You're sleeping really awesome. Great, you need that. Here's the exercise level that your body needs. You feel good with this, okay. Well, maybe as you get healthier, maybe you can increase that or push your body a little bit more. Stress reduction, how you think, how you live, how you process stress, how you've organized your life, how you've delegated, how you've worked on personal development and growth, all those things. And then, okay, here's some supplements that probably your body needs a little bit of support still. I don't know many people that can go without supplements totally. We probably need a little something to help support our system so we don't fall back into it for lots of reasons, for our environment, for our food supply, for just weaknesses that we all sort of have. You know, not that genes dictate everything, but we do have weaknesses, things that we still need a little bit of support with. That's sort of where you're heading big picture-wise. And then they continue to live a healthy life. I'd like them to come back once a year or so, run a few labs, just check in, make sure things are good. I do appreciate clients to do that. You can set up a program to do that if you wanted to. But that's your big goal there, is to get them to that point where they are feeling great and they know what to do. You've trained them, you've taught them, how to fish. We use that analogy pretty often. Maybe we use it too much, but you want to teach them how to fish. And then they can teach their kids how to fish and their mom how to fish and their friend how to fish. Or, hey, you need to go see Rainey. You need to go see Brandon, you know. You need to get lab work done. You need to see really what's going on. And they'll be able to put together a great program to address your individual body chemistry. Because, yeah, there's general things that we can do, right? We know basics of diet, rest, exercise, and some stress reduction things, but can you get to another level with having the information with lab testing? That's it. All right. Well, 13 minutes left in the call today. I'm just going to check to see if we had anything else come in here. If anybody has sometimes I'll get a text here or there or a message sometimes during the call and try to grab a call that way. But boy, a lot of you guys on the call today, thanks for tuning in, guys. Thanks for spending part of your Friday with me. Hopefully it's nice where you are. We had our first snowfall of the year here in Kentucky, about an inch and a half, and let's see, it's pretty much gone now. So a little snow to see, but then it's going to warm back up a little again, and it's good here. Very rural area, and I really enjoy that. Born and raised in Kentucky, if you couldn't tell by my accent, the pokes out sometimes, but it doesn't matter where you're at. We've got FDNs all over the world. Whatever background you're at, you've got to reach the people maybe that you grew up with, that you're connected with, right? So if I had to pick a group of people to work with, I'm probably going to pick people around where I grew up. I know the culture. I know how people think. I know how people work. I know everything about this area. I'm probably going to connect with those people the quickest, right? So that's something to think about, you know, your culture. Maybe you come from a you're not born in the U.S. and you come from another country, and you've got a lot of people from your home country that live in the United States. Maybe that is your people that you work with, because you know the culture, you know the background, you know history, a lot of different things that put things together. So finding that group of people that you connect with, and that's the people that you can help the most. So sort of marketing thing we talk about a lot. You got to get out there, let people know that you exist, and develop relationships so they know who you are. And they trust you, and they want to move forward, and you be the one to take them on this journey that we've been outlining here on this call today, this whole process of the bringing them on and the testing and the working through the real heavy lifting portion of what we do, and then moving on to a maintenance protocol and then living a good, healthy life forever. That's the goal. Whew. All right. Well, that's 11 minutes left in the call today. So if somebody has a question that's on the line right now, now would be the time to hit 1 on your keypad. Otherwise, I'm probably going to run out of time to give you an answer. So I'll do sort of a last call a little bit here for questions. If you guys want to jump on, but if you just want to chill and listen today, maybe you're just listening and you really can't chime in, you're working or something, you're just listening to the call, that's just fine. So, all right, let me find another question here. And I want to cover, what's a good one to end with? And this kind of goes in with some of the gut stuff we're talking about now. So sort of answered it, but we'll answer it again, maybe a little more directly, and it'll be one more off the list of our questions. So the question is, do we always include a Candida protocol at the end of a supplement protocol if a client's 401H detects parasite and or bacterial infection, even if no Candida shows up on the test results? Short answer, yes. The rest of the question is, I know Reed mentioned that we just presume there's some kind of Candida at play as well, as it takes really strong levels to show up on the test results if they're even detected at all. Just want to know whether we include Candida use protocol recommendations automatically in sequence at the end of the protocols or just based on how they feel. So overall, in short, I think my goal is to get results for clients. So I don't really want to leave any stone unturned or do things in a not complete way. So now if you didn't do a specific use protocol, would that make or break your protocol? Maybe not always, right? But I think in general, especially the first time through, the first test you ever do, especially if they have GI problems going on of any sort or some brain fog or any kind of issues at all, because it's not just about, oh, well, you don't have any textbook Candida symptoms, so you probably don't have Candida. Well, you got to watch out for textbook things, right? Because stress on the system manifests in multiple different ways. So a la the brain-body diagram, everybody's body is biochemically different. So that parasite that's in that person or that heavy metal that's there, it can manifest in multiple different symptoms. That is why we what? Don't chase symptoms. Use them as a guide. Be aware of them, yes. But we don't chase them because everybody's body is going to be different. You put the same stress on two different people's bodies, their body is going to give you feedback with symptoms in two multiple different ways. It's not going to be the same thing. Are we very similar? There's going to be a lot of similarities in some of these things to do clinical correlation, yes. But if you can't find the clinical correlation, you still have to go back to the principle of remove stressors, reduce stressors. That is the whole goal. And if the symptoms are there, you know you have stressors. So I would say be thorough, especially on the first protocol. Definitely address yeast with something specifically for that. If that is some, you know, Microbex or Candidex maybe changes with diet or Biocidin, Olivirex, whatever you're doing, you need to address that. Now, the good thing is with yeast, most of the time it's an opportunistic situation. Most species are. There are some that are a little more aggressive or parasitic, but generally most of it's going to be opportunistic, meaning they will grow if they have the opportunity. So the big picture here is restoring gut function, eradicating other infections that are sort of higher on the totem pole, the candida, the bacteria issues that are going on, maybe worms, possibly viruses, things like that that's going on. And typically that will keep candida in check because that immune system has to be strong. So that's why I know a lot of people that have done candida diets or anti-candida diets, candida cleanses, things like that, and they'll feel a temporary improvement. But then within a few months, well, it's back to where it was originally because you didn't address the root causes, the bigger things, the bigger picture of things. It's just trying to address one of those. Yes, you can knock it back some and feel better, but it probably won't be complete. I've had that conversation with many people. How could this recurring yeast infection or vaginal yeast infection or jock itch or athlete's foot, whatever, just coming back and coming back. I've tried all the things external. Well, did you think about this? And I outlined just what I said there. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, shoot, I need to do that. You know, and that's the process there. So just a few little things there that you can teach, real small teaching point that can really get them further down the road. So, yeah, definitely. I think you're going to go up to yeast and address that. Make sure you have something that's addressing that, and they'll be happier. Yeast is native to the gut, so you don't want no yeast at all. There's always this balance, right? There's a balance in the gut. It's not wipe everything out, only have good things. You're going to have a little mixture of things, but there's a balance to strike. All right, another one here. Got time for it. Can someone point me to the point in the course where Reed explains how to use the hormone check record? No, I can't. Right offhand, I don't know. So the best way to do that would be looking at the notes on each one of the videos, or probably better than that, download all the PDFs. They're all in those PDFs of all the slides. Download that PDF document that has all those in there, and you can do edit or something up there menu-wise, search, or I know Control-F or Command-F, and type in hormone check or check record or some combination of those words there, and you're probably going to find out where it is. That's the best way I know to get right to something in the course. Then you're going to see what slide that's on. You know right where to go into the course. So where it is, that's the best I can do for you. Now, using the hormone check record, it's a lot like our other check records that we have. Diet check record, you can make a check record for anything that you want to. Those are, generally, all those are used for a person to write down and record how they're feeling as they are sequencing or titrating supplements or making adjustments to their diet. Because I'm not sure if I could tell you what I had for breakfast 3 days ago. And my breakfast is, I don't have too much variety in my breakfast. I probably could, but think about what you had for lunch a week ago. We forget these things. So writing things down is really important. So if you're adding in hormone drops or things that are supporting or just supplements in general, you can make it a supplement check record if you wanted to. If they want to log how much they're taking and how they're feeling. So on that record sheet there, you'll mark how much you're taking as you increase those amounts, and then how you're feeling. So, good. I feel good, 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 good. Okay. When I got up to this amount, things changed. I didn't feel so great. This is not so good. Then they know, okay, to back off a little bit. Now, they can use that for their own records or turn those into you, and you can troubleshoot with those. Same thing with the diet check record. That's a very good sheet to use. I use that more often, honestly, than the hormone check record. Diet check record sheet is really handy. Write down what you're eating, and then evaluate how you're feeling. You're going to look at satiety. You're going to look at your mood, at your energy, brain function, overall sense of well-being, an hour, hour and a half after you eat. What are you feeling? Those are great barometers. So if somebody says, I need help figuring out my diet, I say, okay, well, based on the metabolic typing, your metabolic type, and your MRT, and sort of what you know about yourself, here's the direction to go. But then you've got to fine-tune that. Well, how do I do that? Well, you need to think about what's on this diet check record sheet. So think about how you're feeling at this point and use these as your gauge. So if every time you eat a meal, what you're eating right now, you feel hungry, for example, an hour later or not satiated, then you might need to adjust your macronutrient ratios. More fat maybe, more protein maybe, less carbohydrate, more carbohydrate, depending on your metabolic type. That's that fine-tuning process there you go through with diet. And you're also teaching your client to do the troubleshooting, the process of FDN. That's what you want them to do anyhow. So learn their body, make those troubleshooting adjustments. And I prefer them to come to me and say, hey, yeah, it's been 2 weeks since we talked. Here's what I found out. And they outline sort of the process they went through. Music to my ears. I love that. Hey, you've got it. You figured it out. You've taught them how to do that. And that's going to serve them the rest of their life. Even if they're not actively working with you, they know how to think through these things and do some troubleshooting, listen to the body, and get that feedback. That's where it comes down to. It's your symptoms, and it's the body's feedback, and it's lab results to decide if you're moving in the right direction. So, what was the question? Oh, yeah, hormone check record sheet. Okay. Yeah, so all those check record sheets, that's what they're designed to do. Now, can you do that on the fly? Can you remember it? Can you sort of say, okay, I've worked up my first six supplements. I've felt good, so I know those are good, and then just sort of do it real time as you're working up those supplements. Because you're only working in one at a time or you're making one change at a time, you can. But, again, people don't always have the best memory and focus, maybe brain fog. We deal with a lot of that, right? Help people through that. Plus, you need real data that you can look at. You're not the person, you don't want the person saying, well, I think this is what I ate. I'm not sure. So sometimes it needs to be written down. So if you really want to get into some serious and professional troubleshooting, utilize those sheets. Okay, well, it's telling me we have 90 seconds left, so I think we're going to wrap up the call for today. I want to say thanks to Rainey again for calling in. Awesome questions. Call in anytime you want to, Rainey. And we'll say congratulations also to our four graduates there, Laura, Lisa, Jennifer, and Jane. Awesome job, ladies. Congratulations. And thank you guys for listening in with me today and for the questions that were submitted. And I guess that's the call today. Guys, have an awesome weekend, and we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.